Thank you for joining us here on Garden Talk today. I'm Keely Boltina on the Ideas Network. Liz Freemoth is back in the studio with us. She provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. And today we're talking about what plants make good gifts and how to care for those. Join in with your comments or questions. You can call right now at 800-642-1234, or you can send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We'll get to your questions, your stories about gift plants and beyond. Liz, thank you so much for being in studio with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. I love coming in. The listeners are fantastic on WPR.
Well,
absolutely fantastic.
We'll get to talking with them in just a few minutes. You know, we should start out. It's hard to look around right now and not see a poinsettia. They're everywhere. It is that time of year. Popular way to, you know, spread seasonal cheer. What are some other popular plants that you see around this time?
Poinsettias, definitely. This is the season for those. But otherwise, we're also seeing narcissus, and you'll see them as paper whites, et cetera. And right now, seeing a lot of scented paper whites in bloom. And those look like double daffodils, almost only tiny flowers, and they're absolutely fantastic. The scent is wonderful. So if you want to add something a little floral into your home, you can actually add a plant like that. The other things that I'm seeing are great house plants that we really should think about adding to any home. House plants can do a great job of pulling toxins out of the air. People are going to just love this to start it right out with. English ivy, great plant, tolerates low light. And did we know that it pulls fecal material out of the air? So a perfect plant to have in a bathroom or something like that. In low light situations, that's generally what we have in a bathroom. And so that's a great plant where they pull the toxins out. And one question I get when you're looking at these plants that pull the toxins out is, so then where do the toxins go? And really, most plants will metabolize those toxins and they don't go anywhere other than into the plant itself. And so you don't have to worry that if you touch the leaves, you're going to have any kind of an issue that you need to worry about. There are many things to look at when you're looking at a gift plant for someone. One of the top things is, number one, do they want a plant?
Good question.
And if you don't know them well enough, then buy a small one because they may end up killing it very quickly or tossing it or regifting it or something like that, which is great. Pass the joy around. But if somebody is really loving plants, then take a look at what kind of light situation they have in their home or go with something that will tolerate a low light situation. Things that need full sun is very particular that you need a full sunny window, a south-facing window for most of the day. So that's a very, very specific site to put a plant in. But things that do work well in that type of light are going to be mums. You can get florist mums right now. And all of these things that I'm going to talk about right here are plants that pull toxins out of the air. And so you're looking at mums for full sun, Gerbera daisy, which does a beautiful job of pulling toxins out. Then we also have lavender and rosemary, and then also look at basil for edibles. But, you know, let's go back to what pulls toxins out for a minute. And, spider plant is a fantastic plant for someone who doesn't have a lot of experience raising plants, kind of a no fail, and you can get babies off of it like crazy. So it's a very satisfying plant. One that is said by NASA to be just phenomenal at pulling toxins out of the air. So a good plant all around. Also, snake plant or mother-in-law's tongue is one that we talk about frequently. Aloe is another one. Those two as succulents, really minimal care. Minimal care. Beautiful thing about those two is they actually release oxygen at night. So good plants to have in a bedroom, not only do they pull toxins out, but they also will release oxygen at night, creating a better sleeping environment for you. When you start looking at plants that are good not only for pulling toxins, but for also making your life a little bit more pleasant, you can look at the lavender again and the rosemary. Those will pull toxins, but you can also use them for other things. So that's just a few to get us started on gift plants. One that I like that doesn't necessarily pull toxins out of the air, but does a beautiful job in a home and moving outside, are Rex begonias, the leafy begonias that act as houseplants and then annuals outside. So you can use them during the summer as potted plants outside, and they're easy, relatively easy to propagate, making them satisfying for a beginner as well.
Really great tips in there for sure to kind of get started in any of those different veins. Mm-hmm. We're talking with Liz Freemuth here on Garden Talk, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234, and want to welcome Lynn from Spring Green to the conversation. Hi, Lynn. Lynn, are you there?
Oops,
we can't quite hear you, Lynn. Oh, hi.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you so much for your patience. What are you wondering today?
I am so glad that you started with the plants that pull toxins. And I was running for a pencil and paper, and I missed the type of daisy. So that's one question.
Mm-hmm. Gerbera.
What kind? The
Gerbers. Typically, they're called Gerber daisies when you go to buy them at a garden center or a florist shop, and you can get them in pots. And they're a little bit picky to grow, but they really do a beautiful job of reblooming for you almost the entire season. They do like a lot of sun. You have to watch the moisture on those. They do not like to have wet roots. So you need to make sure that the pot is well drained. And often that type of a plant will come with a plastic sleeve around it. And if you use that plastic sleeve because you bought it because it looks nice, poke holes in the bottom and put a drainage plate underneath so that plastic sleeve is not holding too much moisture in it.
Excellent. Thank you. I've actually had one that I have managed to keep for 3 years.
Oh, excellent.
Because I have a sunny location and it blooms summer and winter. But my question was specifically about rosemary, because a lot of, they put those out, you know, at holiday time mm-hmm. for gifts. But I haven't been successful, really, mm-hmm. in being able to keep one. So you sort of buy it and kill it.
Well, there is something to that, though. You know, it does provide, they shear them beautifully into that nice tree shape. So you almost have to let them get out of control a little bit to harvest enough rosemary to make that $9.99 or whatever worth it. But it is really kind of a satisfying plant. So what are you doing to it that's not successful, that's not been successful so far?
Good question. I mean, I water it once a week. I managed to kill the last one. Watered once a week like I do the rest of them. I made sure it was well drained. It's in a south window, or it was mm-hmm. in a southern window, so it was getting plenty of light. I put it back outside. I think what may have been its sad death knell was that I live out in the country in a cabin that I rent that has no gutters, and I think it may have just been dumped with too much water.
Ah, okay. And they do not like that. It's a Mediterranean plant, so they do not like excessively wet roots. You can almost let that dry out about 3/4 of the way before you start to water. You don't want those feeder roots towards the top to dry out. So maybe a half is better than 3/4, but you know, good drainage, absolutely fantastic. Does need some airflow, or you will start to see some powdery mildew issues on it. And in order to combat that, you can actually get a fan on it once in a while and just blow that air around so that it you're moving the pathogens. If you're bringing it in from outside, you may actually be bringing external insects in with it. So giving it a nice horticultural soap bath when it comes in for the season will help you get a good start on that. But you're doing many things correctly. So it might be that moving it in and out, it wasn't cleansed enough before it came in, that was just a little bit too much pressure for it. And it also really depends on how old that plant was. If, you know, by the time they get around to shearing them, they may have a good 6 years on them to get them a good size. And it might be time for that plant moving in and out that it's just enough. So for the cost, I would say do your best, but don't kill yourself and go buy another one.
so worth it to try again.
It is. It's worth it to try again. And I would even, you can even try to do that yourself, where you buy one that you're going to use throughout the growing season and then work at bringing it in, maybe shearing it a little bit, expecting that it's not going to survive maybe more than a year or two when you do that.
That's how I am with basil, but it is not a year or two that they survive for
no,
me.
No, no, no. Basil is really more of an annual.
That makes me feel much better.
Yes. So if they're living more than a year, you have a really fabulous basil plant and somebody's going to want to breed on that thing. But for us, really a year, it's an annual plant. And so once you pinch that back and you get a little, sometimes you get a little bit of regrowth, but otherwise it's done. That's it. And then just plant some more seeds. It's beautifully grown from seed, so why not?
All right, that sounds great. Let's go ahead and bring on Roland from Pewaukee now. Roland, welcome to Garden Talk.
Thank you. Good morning. The question is in regard to teacup gardens. Mm-hmm. Ones I have are planted with hen and chicks. How often should I water them and how much?
Are the cups drained? Do they have holes in the bottom?
No.
Okay. So you're talking real teacups and no drainage. You have to be really careful with the drainage on those because hen and chicks are not particularly fond of wet feet. And so you need to figure out a way to get into that. Is it in gravel or is it in dirt? Okay, then you can stick your finger down in there. If it's gravel, then that's a little tougher to get your finger in between the gravel and the teacup. But what you want to do is not feel heavy moisture really towards the top before you water again. So the rule of thumb for most things is the first knuckle on your finger. If you can push your finger into the soil and it's not getting wet until you're up to about the first knuckle, then you're good. Then you can water. They will tolerate some dryness. That's the nature of that plant. So how often you water, that's a beautiful question. You water as much as they need. And not any more than that. And depending on what the temperature is like in the house, you may actually only need to water once every week and a half, or you might need to water every 4 days. And it's going to depend on how much the furnace is running and if you have a humidifier and all of the above things. But the general rule is first knuckle. So if you're feeling moisture on your fingertip when you're down to your first knuckle, you can give it a little drink.
And hen and chicks, they're kind of smaller, low-level mm-hmm. succulents.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And they'll spread. You know, they spread. That's the chicks part of it. Yeah. And so those, we can go to gifting plants with something like that where you can take the babies and actually share your teacup garden with someone else for a holiday gift. You know, get a teacup, get nice drainage, gravel or something in the bottom. So that it's not wicking all the moisture up all the time. Nice soil that's appropriate for succulents, and then put a few babies in there, and that's an excellent gift.
That seems even sweeter than picking something up at the store because you're sharing what you love.
Mm-hmm.
Very
mm-hmm.
nice. Well, you're listening to Garden Talk. Thanks for being here with us. I'm Keeley Boltina, and we've got expert Liv Freemuth in studio. We're taking the conversation mostly indoors this time of year, but we'll take any of your garden questions. You are part of this conversation. Give us a call at 800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And when you want to hear more about our guests or show topics, maybe you've missed a bit of this, check out our new blog. You can go to wpr.org/Larry. I'm Keeley Boltina, and we'll be right back here on the Ideas Network. Chances are you might find yourself with a new plant this holiday season. And if you're anything like me, you might not know exactly how to take care of it. Fear not. This is Garden Talk, and Liz Freemuth is our guide. There's room for you, too, at 800-642-1234. How are your plants around the house looking? Have you ever had success, or maybe not very much success, with a plant that someone gave to you as a gift? Share it with us, your story. Email ideas@wpr.org. Grace in New Glarus wants to get in on this conversation. Grace, thanks for being here.
Hi. So I would like to know specifically like what kinds of toxins you're talking about plants removing from the air.
It varies plant to plant. When we look at what types of toxins you would actually want to remove or what can be removed, things that come up frequently are formaldehyde, xylene, which comes off of rubber products. You have... oh, you're gonna catch me, and my brain is gonna go blanco. Carbon dioxide, things like that. And so it really depends. Much of that will come from off-gassing from carpets or paint, products that are in the home. The xylene that comes off of rubber will off-gas off of rubber products. And so those are the things that concern people, because getting those into the system, not good for you as humans. So this helps to pull some of those out. Mold in the air is one also. In English ivy that we spoke about earlier actually does do a pretty good job of pulling mold out of the air. So those are the types of things that we're looking at. And it's you can go to NASA website. You can also go to some of the science websites, and they will help you take a look at that list and if there is a plant that's appropriate to pull that out. So if there's a concern that you have in your home, you can take a look and see, yes, there's a plant for that.
Fascinating. Mm-hmm. Good question, Grace. Thanks
is,
for that.
Yeah.
And I loved when talking about cleaning the air that you mentioned spider plants up. I actually have one in my office here from Stephanie Elkins, and my grandma always had one just hanging there in the window with its little babies, always said that it was good for the air in the house. So, you know, that's a thing that people know, and that's why we keep them around.
Yeah, absolutely. And they actually function well as outdoor potted plants, too. You know, they have that beautiful grassy look, and so you can take the babies and create interest in your outside containers for during the summer months.
Oh, how neat. Another way to use it, for sure. Laura in Marshfield, what is your question? Welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. I have a limey plant.
Excellent.
That's a lime tree, right?
Yes. And I hear him talk about his limey a lot.
Larry Mueller does.
Yeah, I have a lemmy. He has a limey. Mine's a lemon.
Lemmy and limey. Okay.
Yeah.
It does have spider mites. Mm-hmm. And I know there's a soap solution, dish soap, and water and something else. But I'm concerned about that soap getting into the soil and what damage to the roots.
Yeah, I don't advocate using dish soap or laundry detergent on plants for a couple of reasons. Number one, they're not formulated for plants, and the oils are not consistent throughout each batch of that dish soap or laundry soap. And if you have a situation where that oil is a little bit too heavy, the sun hits it, it can actually burn the leaf. So my suggestion is, if you have mites and you want to use a soap solution to help clean them off, I would go and get a horticultural soap, one that is made for plants. So you know that the particular type of oil that's used in making that soap is not going to assist in burning those leaves, and then just follow the directions for it. If you're using a horticultural soap and you're worried about the soil, what I would actually say is most of the time you can rinse that stuff through, so it's not going to be that big of a deal. But if you are concerned about it, you can cover the surface of the soil with a plastic wrap or a canvas, you know, waterproof canvas or something like that. And you sort of tip the tree on its side and wash it that way so that you're not really rinsing it through the soil. If you have a situation where you're concerned about the eggs that from whatever particular insect critter you have, some of them do lay eggs on the top surface of the soil. If you are concerned about that, actually putting a layer of sand on the surface of the soil will help with that. What happens when you do that is it creates a dry area that the eggs cannot mature and hatch in. It actually desiccates the insect eggs, especially if they're surface layers. So that will help remediate that without going to a chemical level. And otherwise, just cleaning them very, very well. If it's a huge lime tree, even 2 feet tall, that's a lot of leaves. And so you may have to wipe each and every one. You might not get all of the critters off by just rinsing with the soap. So you may have to take a solution in a soft rag and wipe the top and the bottom surface of the leaves to get everything off that you need off. With a lime tree and with any citrus trees, please check the stems and the trunk, because we do get scale on those that when we move them inside and out, we will get scale that attaches and comes into the house. And oftentimes, if you're not looking at it on a daily basis, you won't see the little crawlers going around, and then you'll see all kinds of little bumps that look like half rocks on your stems and on the leaves. So more so the stems than the leaves, but you still can see them sometimes. Those you may have to pick off hand by hand, and you just kind of peel them off and then use the horticultural soap to suffocate the soft critters underneath.
Mm. Laura, what do you think? Some options you might be able to try with your limey?
I sure will. And I do have another question.
Sure.
I've read now with the limey, I've read for to keep the soil moist, and then I've read let it dry out between. And so I'm very confused about how I should water it.
Yeah. It goes to the interior conditions that you're bringing it into, as we had talked about earlier. If it's super dry, you don't want it to dry out 3/4 of the way before you're watering this one. Right now, you should be seeing, well, you should probably be seeing it move into a flower stage. Or, well, what's the flower fruit on yours? Is it January or so that you get fruit?
I've gotten fruit in, it was actually August or September.
Okay. You should get another one coming up. They will, what will happen is they will start to flower in January, February, something like that, if it's on that type of a schedule. And so what you want to do is make sure that anything that you're using on it is going to be safe for a fruiting citrus tree, and fertilizer, any other kind of products, that's what you want to use is something for citrus. I know Larry uses fish emulsion on his, but if you don't have access to that, then it's easier just to get a citrus fertilizer. And so when you're watering, you want to pay attention to what the process is of that tree. And right now it's probably a little bit in a state of dormancy, because if it fruited in August, it will continue to grow, and then you'll see it not really have much going on until the flowers start, you see the buds start to appear. What you don't want to do is over fertilize at this time of the year. You can continue to water. You can cut back slightly so that the top inch or so is a little bit more on the dry side. And then you can begin, when you start to see those buds pop, you can begin to fertilize and water a little bit more frequently. So you don't want to let it dry out completely and totally, but if you look at where these trees are from, and it depends on which type of lime tree it is, it may be more Mediterranean climate or it may be more tropical. Overall, any of the lime and lemon trees, oranges, etc., can actually use a little bit more humidity than what we have in houses. So putting down a rock tray underneath the plant with a little bit of water in the bottom and have that surround the tree so that as that water evaporates, that moist air is going to migrate upward and create a nice humid environment for that plant. And that you can do whether it's in a dormant state or not. Just increasing that humidity will improve its health. What you don't want is that water touching the bottom of the pot so that it's sucking moisture up from the bottom. And that should give you a little bit of leeway if you're not sure whether you should water, if you're watering too much or too little. As long as you have that area of humidity, the plant will have some moisture to draw on while you figure it out.
All right, Laura.
Does that help, Laura?
Thank you.
All right. Sounds great. There's a lot there. Laura gave us a really great opportunity to talk about those citrus plants. So that's wonderful. You can bring up what you'd like to. What questions do you have about the plants in your home or maybe some you're thinking about gifting this year? 800-642-1234. We'll get you through to our Garden Talk expert, Liz Freemuth. And Jill from Medford wants to join us now. Jill, what is going on in your home?
I have an amaryllis that I thought was dormant, but it started to grow in the dark there way too early, I thought. And I kind of let it get away from me, and then I cut off the stuff that was growing, and I don't know what I should do now.
Did it have any cold treatment at all, or was it inside?
It was outside all summer, and I didn't bring it in until November, and then it was in the garage for a while until all of the leaves got brown and fell off.
Okay.
Then I put it in the basement.
Got it. You may have cut off the bloom stem by cutting it back. What you can do, if that happens again in the future, is slowly bring it into a more intense light situation, because it probably, my guess is if it was growing in the dark, that it was rather white in color or a very, very light green. And that means that it wasn't getting enough sun to complete photosynthesis, and so it was doing what it could do with the light that was given. And they will adjust if you slowly move them into a higher sun situation, you know, like over a couple of weeks. So you add a light to it, and then you put it in a brighter room, and then you move it closer to a sunny window, etc. I would say go for it anyway. Bring it in and put it in a nice sunny spot. Water it, fertilize it, and see what happens. As I said, you may have cut off the bloom stem, or it may just have been leaves. Without looking at it, I can't tell you. But if that happens again, don't worry about it. You know, plants are going to be way more forgiving than what we give them credit for. What's important for bulbs is that they have some cold treatment appropriate to the specific type, this is specific species that you're dealing with. The general, the bigger the bulb, the more cold it needs. So you having it outside really was great, because that allowed the carbohydrates to develop in the base to produce that bloom bud. And so it's, hopefully it was just the leaves, but I would say go for it. What do you have to lose? Bring right. it, you know, bring it in, get it in sun, water, et cetera.
And the amaryllis there, we often see them with the bright red, mm-hmm. big flowers, this time of year, big gift plant mm-hmm. too. So when you pick those up in the store, do you want to buy them when they're flowering? Like at what stage should you pick those up to give them to people?
Depends on what you're, depends is my favorite word. It's really, if you're giving it as a flowering gift, mm-hmm. then you want to get it where it's in flower so you know what color it is, because the colors will range from white, salmon, orange, yellow, not really. It'll be kind of like a creamy white. And so if you're giving a specific color, then you do want to see what that color is before you gift it, especially if you have somebody who's a little picky on colors that they put in their house. Otherwise, if it's for somebody who wants to grow it, then they will generally have a picture and get them a pot and a bulb and a little, you know, like a little bag of soil to go with it. And what you're looking for an amaryllis is to be tight in the pot. So you only want about half an inch to an inch larger in diameter than the bulb itself. And it will stick up out of the pot quite a bit. Maybe about the top half to third will stick up out of the pot. And that's really all you need. Good drainage on the bottom, nice drainage hole, etc. So it depends on if you're buying it as a floral gift for someone to display or to grow themselves.
That makes sense. Chris in Adams also called to ask how she can get her amaryllis bulbs from last year to rebloom. Says they have lots of green leaves but no blossoms.
If they have no blossoms, I'm guessing that they didn't have the cold treatment mm-hmm. that they need to encourage those carbohydrates to do their business and do a bloom. What I would do is don't get rid of it. If it's looking healthy and it's fantastic, you may actually even get some little babies popping off the base. So if it doesn't look like it's going to do anything by about January or so, I'm really hopeful. I think plants are going to do what I don't expect them to do. And so give it plenty of time to say, yes, I'm going to shoot a bloom up. But if it doesn't do that, then you can pull it out of the pot, see if it's got any babies around it, pull those off, you know, do what you need to do. But then take a look at making sure that it's in a cold situation for X amount of weeks. And I would have to look to see what it is for amaryllis, but I think it's going to be like a large amount, like 10, 12 weeks of cold. And, you know, we're looking at probably temperatures beneath 50. So if you can do that outside and, you know, look up cold treatment for amaryllis online, and it'll tell you exactly what you need to do. But if you have it outside and it goes down that far at night or in a cool garage or a cool building, you'll definitely have the cold treatment that it needs in order for it to get that bulb bloom to develop.
Sure, so that the plant knows what to do next.
Yeah, it does, as long as we give it what it needs, yeah.
All right, great. Will, who is traveling through Wisconsin, wants to join Garden Talk. Will, thanks for being here.
Hi, thank you for having me. Morning.
What do you wonder today?
Well, I have a Majesty palm that I got from the discount rack at a big box store, and I decided to nurse it back to health. And it seemed to rebound over the summer. But now that we're going into the winter months, I'm noticing a lot of yellowing, and I can't really seem to keep it there anymore. And I'm wondering if I'm doing everything right with it.
Is it an indoor or an outdoor?
It's an indoor.
Indoor, okay. You will see some normal yellowing at this time of the year. I wouldn't worry about that tremendously. Palm trees will tolerate an awful lot. They have a very shallow root system. And so if it's got standing water in it, I would be concerned about that because you don't have a lot of forgiving roots to fall back on. Are you losing all of the fronds on it, or are you just seeing some yellowing here and there?
Just some yellowing. I've got it in a self-draining pot with gravel on the bottom.
Okay, excellent. The yellowing that you're seeing, is it on the tips or is it overall on the fronds?
It's kind of spread around the whole thing, but it seems to be on the outer edges of the fronds.
Okay, if it's on the outer edges of the fronds, then you may actually take a look at whether you're watering it enough. And what may happen is with the good drainage, you need to soak that every once in a while. So you need to, is this huge? Before I tell you to put it in the sink, is it like 8 feet across?
No, it's probably about a foot tall at this point.
Oh, okay.
I actually groomed it back a little bit. When I got it, I had to cut off a bunch of dead ones.
Okay, good. So what you can do periodically is what I do with my orchids is you just need to soak the base for a couple of minutes, let it drain beautifully, and sometimes that's just enough to get all of those roots, all of the moisture that they need to keep all of those leaves healthy. As soon as I start to see some dieback around edges or some browning or yellowing around edges, a couple of things I think of. Is there any sort of a pathogen that's hitting the roots? And then is there a watering situation that I'm not giving it just quite enough? Or am I giving it too much? So those are really the three things to look at. And if you just recently, you know, if you got it off of the sale bin, I would hope that there were no issues with it, you know, disease, insect, et cetera. So I would take a look at the roots again to see what they're looking like in there. So pull it out and really kind of look around a little bit and then repot it. It will be fine. And right now, if you've got a little bit of yellowing and a few issues going on, you may actually need to repot it, take a look at it, and just give it overall better health. Then make sure you pick up a fertilizer for palms. And they don't need a lot right now at all. But I would say after the holidays, then you can start looking at fertilizing every couple of weeks or so, and then as the light increases on it, as the season gets a little bit longer, then you can increase that fertilizer, and that may help take care of it. When you have that out of the pot, make sure the roots look healthy. They should be creamy color. They should, you know, if you're scratching into them, you should see nice healthy tissue. And if you're not, then you may have to look at some sort of a fungal problem with the roots. And at that point, then I would say you send a root sample to Brian at the lab in Madison, and he can tell you what you're dealing with and what products would be needed.
Wow. Lots of great tips about that palm. So, Will, good luck with that as you try to figure out what's going on and certainly how to handle it. Mm-hmm. You're hearing those tips from Liz Freemuth. She's back with us talking about plants and taking your gardening questions, one of our many guests here on Garden Talk. And just know that if you missed part of our show or just want to hear it again, you can always go to our archives. Visit WPR.org/Larry to hear recordings of our past broadcasts, often with Larry Mueller. You can search by date or topic, and those go back years. Right now, we're taking your questions about plants. How can we help you? Join the conversation at 800-642-1234. We continue with your questions in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. We're focusing on some indoor plants here on Garden Talk with expert Liz Freemuth. And we're also taking any other gardening questions that are on your mind. Thanks for listening. I'm Keely Boltina here on the Ideas Network. And we want to know, what plant do you like to give as a gift this time of year? Or what kind of help do you need as you care for a plant that maybe somebody else gave you? Or how do you make sure that people take care of the plant you're giving to them? Join us at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. That number again, 800-642-1234. And we'll bring on Nancy from Grafton now. Nancy, welcome to Garden Talk.
Well, good morning. I have a neighbor across the road, and people give her plants. They give her orchids and so forth. Well, when they're finished blooming, guess who gets the orchids? Nancy, me. So she knows that I take care of them. Well, I have one of them right now that is just got nice big blossoms on. It's going to open pretty soon. And when the plants that she gives me bloom, then I take them across the street over to her house, and I let her see what they look like and that they're still alive. And it's like, you know, regeneration and keeping on with life. And I even ask her if she wants them to stay at her house for a while until they go back again to the dormant stage. And she really likes that because she gets to see those over and over again. And I have a Christmas cactus. It's a huge thing. And I just looked at it, and you know what? It only has two little blossoms on it. It's going to have some flowers, only two. And I'm wondering if I should take it out of the pot next spring or summer, and I'll give it to my daughter to do that. She's better at me. And repot it. And also, what kind of fertilizer should it have?
Christmas cactus is a succulent. We'll start with that one. Christmas cactus is a succulent, so a fertilizer for flowering succulents. You know, really, the companies make it so easy for us to go and get the right thing. So it's just go in to your local garden center or big box, whatever you have close to you, and see if they have it on the shelf. If they don't, then you may have to then create your own. But they don't need a lot. They do need periodic. Anything that flowers really does need some fertilizer. And you want to focus fertilizer on flowering plants after they flower, while they're flowering and after they flower, because that takes an awful lot of energy out of the plant. And so you do need to be aware of putting some nutrients back into the system. And timing it that way is good, that you're not then interrupting the bud bloom development stage. If you over fertilize, you can actually encourage vegetative growth on any plant, as opposed to letting that plant really pinpoint its energy into flower production. So I would say yes, after it flowers is the perfect time. You can take a look at the roots, have your daughter take it out of the pot, take a look at the roots, see if they look like they're starting to get a little cramped. Christmas cactus actually doesn't mind being a little tight in the pot, but it may be that it's time for a different pot. Even if you just take it up by a half an inch, that may rejuvenate it somewhat. I find with my Christmas cactus, actually I'll get an early, like, oh, I think I'm going to bloom about halfway through the cycle. And then in a few months, it'll just be covered with blooms. And so it may not actually be a Christmas cactus, but it may be an Easter cactus. And, you know, so don't think it's you. I'm going to say it's the plant and the system and the life we're living. That's what I'm going to go with. And I have to say, I absolutely love what you do with your neighbor. Oh my goodness. I think that is so fantastic. And what a great thing to give your neighbor all year long, to take their plants, get them to bloom again, and give them back. Even just to visit, I think that's fantastic. And I have to ask Nancy, what do you do with your orchids that is so successful? What's your system?
I just have it sitting in the front, in a south window and on a table there. And just they're there all the time. They don't move around.
They're such easy plants, aren't they, when they're happy?
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I smile, so I let them smile, too.
And you know what? They can tell. We know they can tell. And does your neighbor really enjoy that?
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yes, indeed. Yes.
I think that's just so fantastic. I don't think you could give a gift as good as the one you're giving. That is wonderful.
Thank you.
You know, we got an orchid when we purchased our house from the people who owned it before, and I kind of forget about it. Mm-hmm. Like, it just kind of sits there, and then the flowers come back, and mm-hmm. I mean, it, it's kind of flourishing in its neglect.
That's what I love about them so much. And I'm sure the orchid growers out there are probably cringing.
I know.
I'm a novice at orchids. I am really a novice at it. And my mom calls me and asks me, well, what did you do to your orchids to get them to re-bloom? It's like, not much. I kind of did like Nancy did. I put them there and they're happy in where they are and the blooms just come. So she gets a little envious about that. Her house doesn't have the right spot for them.
Gotcha.
100%.
And we've got some orchid questions. First, though, let's go to Bonnie in Peterson, Minnesota. Bonnie, thanks for being here on Garden Talk.
Hello.
Hi. What are you wondering today?
My question was about pawpaw plants. We have some seeds we picked up in Indiana, and we wondered how to plant them, when, and what kind of care they should have.
How far up is Peterson?
We're in southeast Minnesota.
Okay.
So,
So you may be able to get those to go. What part of Indiana did you get them from?
Southern Indiana.
Oh, okay. I say give it a whirl. You have the seeds. Why not? Pawpaws, like many plants, their provenance is related to their climate, where they can be successful. So, and I would say I would have to actually check to see what the germination process is like for a pawpaw. I'm guessing, just following what nature does, is that it's going to need some sort of cold. And it's also going to need some sort of scarification to get that seed to open up and actually germinate. So I'm going to do I kind of know, but not really. And I think that if you want to be 100% successful with this, then I would look up germination procedure for pawpaw.
And, perfect.
And then that will actually give you the exact amount of weeks that you need of cold. And if it needs scarification, which is just a scratching of the outside of the seed cover, in order for that seed to germinate and pop, it may be that it's plenty soft and you can actually just put it in moist and it will pop open. Then I would say if you're going to do that, the time period you're looking at is going to be do that over winter and stay with Mother Nature's cycle. If you're looking at a southern Indiana plant, you really are looking more at about the end of February, beginning of March, that you would want that to maybe the end of March germinate and start to grow. Then you would pot that up, keep it outside, and plant it at some point, depending on how it develops. Plant that outside during the season before the end of August, because you want to make sure that that's established enough so that you get as much as you possibly can out of the health of it before it hits one of our winters. And that's going to be the kicker right there, is how cold is the winter and is it going to take it out? So you may want to, if you want to baby it a little bit, you may want to provide a little bit of protection for it over this next winter. But my suggestion always is, if you're going to try and protect a plant over winter, do not do it until the ground freezes solid, because otherwise you're going to provide bed and breakfast for rodents that are going to move in and say, yahoo, thank you for the food all winter. If you wait until the ground freezes solid, most of those have found homes over winter and the damage is much likely to be less. Not 100%, but it's much likely to be less. So then after the ground freezes solid, you can cover with leaves, etc., and you should be good.
And when it comes to the pawpaw, how strict are those growing zones? Because a lot of Minnesota, or most of Minnesota and a lot of Wisconsin, are outside of that.
Yes,
for the pawpaw.
Definitely.
I mean, is there still hope?
I'm always hopeful, because plants surprise me. I have brought many plants up from Georgia, from North Carolina, South Carolina, to test them to see will they survive or won't they survive. And I have brought some up that people just would shake their head and go, this is a futile effort. 98% of the time it is a futile effort, but the other 2% have developed into plants that I know we can use that do very well for us and don't bring problems with them. And pawpaw is one that has a very distinct range, and Minnesota is typically not the range. But if you have the seed, why not give it a try? You know, what are you going to lose? And you'll have some fun in the process and learn something. So I say, go for it. Go for it.
Talking with the ever optimistic expert, Liz Freemuth, here on Garden Talk. Thanks for being with us here on the Ideas Network as we cover your questions and your stories about the plants you have in your home. Rinda in Milwaukee wants to talk to us today. Hi, Rinda.
Hi there.
What are you wondering?
I have an orchid that was gifted to me, and I would like to save it. I thought I should repot it, and so I discovered, you know, it's mostly leaves on it. Mm-hmm. That's part of the question. The second part is it appears to be a second generation. What I do have left is a second generation. It's like upstairs,
mm-hmm.
And it has two green leaves and two roots. I initially thought they were blooms, but the undeveloped blooms. But mm-hmm. I realized that they are roots.
Okay.
And how to care for it?
Okay, what you're looking at doing, if I'm hearing your description correctly, you have a stem coming up, and they're going to be elongated, almost grass-like leaves on it. And as you kind of go up the stem, where you saw something develop, is it shooting out roots? Kind of, they look almost like white hairs coming out, heavy hairs?
Yes.
Okay. What you can do with that, and which one it is escapes me right now. Again, I'm a novice, but I know this because I have the same thing at my house. And what you do is you cut off, if you want to repot that, wherever you're seeing those nodes that are shooting the roots off, you actually cut just beneath that, so closer to the pot, just beneath that, and you can create another plant with that. And so you can leave the original plant there and see how that develops. It may die back. It may actually do something. But you take that new plant and you pot it into an orchid appropriate mix, and that will get you a new plant, and it should flower for you too.
All right.
Does that make sense, Brenda?
Yes, it does. But what I visualize is not having much stalk to put in the dirt.
No, you're not going to have. You're not. And really, those roots with the orchid, they're not going to be like what you're used to planting outside or with other house plants. You're not really going to bury that deep into the ground, into that mix. What you're going to do is just lay it gently and cover that with a thin layer of potting mix, of orchid potting mix, which is going to be very mulch-like almost, and some of them will have a little charcoal in them, etc. So you're not talking about burying it deeply. It's really going to sit almost right at the surface, just beneath the surface. Does that make more sense to you?
Yes, it does, and
okay.
Thank you very much.
Oh, good luck with it. Let us know how it does.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting to see it. Maybe she'll have two really successful orchid plants then.
And as it develops, as that older stem develops, you'll actually sometimes see two and three coming off of it. It's very fun.
And orchids are all over the place right now. You see them because mm-hmm. they're these beautiful, really fragile plants that, mm-hmm. that are just lovely to give to other people. What about if you've got one? Is there a way to help it bloom again, or do you really just have to follow along with the orchid?
You know, as long as you follow along with the orchid and make sure that it gets some food, orchid-appropriate food, so that when you're watering it or soaking it, you have a light fertilizer in it every once in a while. You really only need that every couple of weeks or so. And again, pay attention to what the cycle and I have to repeat, I am a novice. So this is what I do with mine. And the orchid experts are probably, again, cringing, but this is what I do with mine. So when I am soaking them for that minute or two, I will use a very, very weak fertilizer in that water. And then they stay in for a minute or two, and then they're out. And because if you try to water most orchids, that's going to run right through. And so they're not going to retain a lot of the nutrients. And so that does give you a way to really get that nutrient there long enough for it to suck it up.
That quick soak.
Yep, mm-hmm. quick soak, yep.
Another thing we see a lot of places right now are the Norfolk Island pines, the mm-hmm. one that look like little Christmas trees. How should we care for those if they wind up in our homes?
Yeah, they like humidity. It's actually an island plant from, you know, South Seas area, Norfolk Island. I think that's South Seas. And so you need humidity. Bathrooms are good for something like that. And they will tolerate an awful lot of abuse. It's an island plant, so it gets a lot of wind. You know, the original plants got a lot of wind, so it will tolerate movement. It will tolerate a lot of stuff, but they do need more humidity.
And would you use kind of that same technique that you talked about for the citrus plants, where you make water available around that?
So you take, in order to do that, what you need to do is get a container, not a deep one, but a shallow container of some sort that can sit underneath the canopy of the plant. So you take a look at how wide is the top, and you want that water just to be at the base, and those rocks are to hold the pot off the water. It's not that the rocks serve much other purpose other than so that the roots aren't soaking in moisture. And you fill that with water periodically. You know, just keep a nice low level of water in it. And as it evaporates, you get moisture on the plant. So, yeah, you can do that with anything that needs high humidity.
And that shouldn't affect your house very much either. No. You don't have to worry about adjusting the humidity of your house or jeopardizing anything like that.
You know, we can't really add enough humidity to our homes to accommodate what plants need. So we can do whatever we can to give them a little bit more humidity.
Okay, great. And sunlight always a challenge too this time of year?
It can be. And you can use artificial lights. LEDs are out there, inexpensive, relatively inexpensive since the burgeoning other markets. And so you can actually add light to it.
Okay. Great options, especially for the plants that are already in your homes or the plants that you may get as gifts this season. Liz Freemoth provides concierge horticultural services all around the country through her business, The Garden Hoe. Here with us on Garden Talk, I'm Keely Boltina in for Larry Mueller, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Welcome back to Garden Talk. I'm Keely Boltina in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us. We have Liz Freemoth back with us here on the Ideas Network. Liz provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. And we're taking your gardening questions. Do you need advice on selecting a houseplant? What gardening questions do you have? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. You have time to talk with Liz, and we have a line for you at 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org. And joining this conversation now with Liz is Kurt from Brownsville. Kurt, thanks for being here.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I've started some willows from cuttings. And they're about maybe 18 inches long, and they got real good roots, and we planted them this last summer, and they've got probably 5-6 nice branches coming off of them. And above the top branch, that cutting, maybe that last 3 or 4 inches on top, doesn't seem to be green like the rest of the cutting. I was just wondering, does that have to be trimmed off, or do you just leave that when you let the willow grow?
And this is from the original cutting. That's the top of the original cutting?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I would do a let's see what it does next spring. More than likely, if it's browning from the top down in that area, you're not going to get any growth until you get to a node of some sort. And so if you have growth, you know, underneath that top cutting area. So if you're noticing that it's starting to die back and you can see where to take it down to, you know, to a node, then you can go ahead and cut that off. I would wait until winter, till the middle of winter. What I worry about when we look at pruning anything outside right now is we are so unpredictable on the weather that if you cut it and we get a nice chunk of weather, you may actually encourage some leaf development, especially on a new cut. And so I would hold off until about February or so. And then take a nice hot beverage out with you, a pruners and some disinfectant, because our nod to Dr. Death is that make sure when you're making cuts, when you're going in between plants, and especially when you're talking about new plants, make sure you disinfest your equipment with either isopropyl alcohol or something else that is going to work equally well, and disinfest those pruner blades in between plants so that you're not spreading stuff between your plants. But then, yeah, if it doesn't look like it's going to pop anything, go ahead and cut it off.
Kurt?
Oh, okay, good. Yeah, because it looks like it's getting real thick around the branches that are coming up. It got maybe twice the size. It's just that section where there's no more branches coming out. Yeah, it's real small and brown, so that's why I thought maybe I could trim it. But I just wanted to find out for sure.
Yeah, and when you're looking at trimming it and where you take it down to, if there's a leaf, you know, leaf node of some sort or a branching section, you want to make sure that you leave about, it's roughly about a quarter of an inch if you can't see the collar, the growth collar around that joint. What kind of looks like a turtleneck. Sometimes if you're looking at it, you want to cut just to the outside of that, because that area on the plant actually has nice healing tissue and it will close over very nicely. And it takes longer if you cut into that. So if you stay just to the outside of that area, you're good. It might be just a slight swelling, or it may be a little bit more bumpy than that, depending on your plant. But I would say go for it. If you notice a distinct difference, this is the time to get your judge robe on and make that call and say, you know what, you're not up to snuff, let's get rid of you. Go for it.
Okay.
Be
great.
Thank be you bold.
Very much.
Be bold.
Okay.
Good luck with that, Kurt. We really appreciate your call at 800-642-1234. And there's room for you in this Garden Talk conversation, whether we're talking about plants that are already in your home that you've got that you wonder about, or if you're looking at plants as gifts. Give us a call now, 800-642-1234, to talk to Liz Freemoth. And Liz, Annie from Apple Valley said, I have always wanted a bonsai, but I'm terrified to kill it. Matt from Madison would like to buy a bonsai tree too, wondering about any tips in selecting and caring for those.
I would ask for an expert's help on that one. And, you know, if you're going to buy a bonsai tree, I would say indulge yourself and sign up for a class, so that you are learning completely and totally what to do. And if you're from Madison, I'm pretty sure that Olbrich Botanic may have some classes or may know somebody who can help you get started on a bonsai class. I love bonsai. I'm totally inept. Totally inept. I just do not do a good job with that. So I'm going to kind of defer to somebody else with it. But like with any other plant, what you look for is something healthy. And that means you may actually have to take a look at the roots, and depending on how much you're going to spend on it, do you get one that's started or do you start from scratch? How do you do that? And it depends on your interest level. One thing I will say, totally not related to how to buy one, if you ever find yourself on the East Coast in Washington, D.C., go to the National Arboretum and look at the 200-300-year-old bonsais. You will be humbled completely and totally. But it is such a gift to be able to figure out how to do that and to mold those plants. So that's what I would do, is I would go to Olbrich, give them the question and see what they can come up with for you.
That's one of those that's going to require more effort.
It is, yeah. And, you know, if you're buying it for yourself, again, indulge, take a class and really get into it. If you're buying for somebody else, you may want to buy one that's, you know, not as expensive, and or get them a class and a plant if you know they really love it. It's time intensive.
All right. Well, some things are worth that.
It is.
But you really do have to decide for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yep.
All right. Peggy from Madison, thanks for giving us a call.
Hi. I have a Chinese money plant that my daughter gave me. And I know they're finicky. Mine is still alive, and I've had a couple, maybe two new leaves grow on it. But I'm wondering if you can give me some tips on how to maintain it. And maybe I have it in a south-facing window right now behind some other plants, and wondering if that is a correct exposure for it, too.
If it's happy and you haven't killed it yet, it's the right exposure. I mean that because they are finicky. It may actually like being in close proximity to those other plants. What happens when plants are with each other is they do keep the air a little bit more humid because they're taking in moisture from the air and they're also expiring it to a certain extent. So that does create a nice growing environment for that plant. I think often when people buy them, they put them into a non-humid environment and they tend to dry out very quickly. So they do need sun and they do need humidity. So what you're doing, if you have two new leaves, I would say it's time to party. You're good. Just keep doing what you're doing. You're good.
And let's talk about the Chinese money plant. Thanks for bringing it up, Peggy, because mm-hmm. it's got kind of long, thin stems and then broad, kind of flat leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, would that be a good plant to gift? You said they were kind of finicky.
It really, you know, you take a look at your giftee.
Okay.
Because if that giftee,
case by case.
Exactly. If that giftee really likes finicky plants or has a perfect environment to put it where it's going to grow beautifully, then I say go for it. But otherwise, you may want to go a little easy on that. How much work does it take? You don't want to wreck a non-plant person by giving them something that's going to die instantaneously. And obviously, if Peggy's daughter gave her this, she knows she likes a challenge, or she wouldn't have done that. And when you look at plants that have wide leaves on them, there's an awful lot of surface area. And many times, conditions are magnified. So if it's dry, it will dry out faster because that's more surface area that's going to dry out all at the same time. So for a plant that likes humidity, again, let's look at that tray of rocks and water, and will that add enough humidity to keep that large leaf happy? One that I've had tremendous success with that I keep hearing from people is the fiddlehead fig. Or the fiddle leaf fig. And it's the one that you see architecturally in magazines where it's got the huge leaves and they're just very, very outstanding. Well, you can kill them in a heartbeat with a couple of things. Too much water, wet roots, and dry as a bone. So that's one where you really almost have to shower it and provide moisture underneath, make sure it has well-drained soil. I'm up for the challenge. Other people are not. So it really is case by case.
I think that's smart to think about the person. And mm-hmm. and realistically, if they have the time, if you mm-hmm. have the time to engage in those sorts of things to take care of those plants.
And do remember that if you give that plant, they're going to call you when there's an issue. So you may actually want to go easy. Or depending on if you want more interaction with them, you know, it could be a reason for a Wednesday night. Let's figure out what's wrong with my plants, which, you know, that can involve cocktails, books, tea, you know, whatever. It could be a fun time. But is that really where you want to go? So you might want to go with an easy plant.
There's a lot of psychology in gifting of plants.
Oh,
I like this.
Oh, yeah.
We'll take an email here. But just to remind you, you've got a line open at 800-642-1234. We still have time to talk with Liz Freemuth here on Garden Talk. So if you have a question, now's your opportunity to make that call at 800-642-1234. We have a listener who emailed that she planted 8 asparagus bulbs in a whiskey barrel in May of this year. 4 of them sprouted, and she wants to transplant those to the back of her shed. So she's wondering, you know, when is the best time to do that? How deep should she put them in the soil? How much sunshine do they need? Where do we start?
You start in the spring, so prepping, and right now, as long as you've got clear soil, you can, and it's not frozen, depending on where was she from? Doesn't say. Mm-hmm. Depends on which part of the state. So if you've got snow cover on the ground already, you're past the point of prepping. If you're in, you know, probably Madison South, you can pull sod up off of where you want it to be next year and get the dirt at least exposed. And that will give you something to do between now and Christmas New Year's, because none of us have anything to do. And
just
I say that
tongue-in-cheek. Nothing at all.
tongue-in-cheek. And so then what you want to do is in spring, you want to prep that soil. And the roots, they're not bulbs, but they're roots of the asparagus plant do need to be planted quite deep. You know, it's down about a foot or so. And so it does take quite a bit. Now, she's actually rooted them already. So you don't have to go down, you still might want to go 10 inches with the trench that you put them in. And you have a little bit of soil in the middle so that you can drape those roots over the top. Because when she pulls them out, more than likely, they're going to be, the soil will fall off. So, it, you know, if the soil is around those roots, then you can just put that in. But if not, if the roots come out, then you have a little bit of a mound, you put those in and you cover them with dirt up to so that you can't see them anymore. You allow it to grow, and then you continue to fill that trench in throughout the season. You're really looking at least a few years before you harvest off of that. Even if it sends up very small stalks, you don't want to harvest right away. You want to allow those roots to develop to really encourage a good growth of harvestable stalks. So, you know, and I would let them go in the barrels and see what happens. They may surprise you. It may be that they're growing underneath and they're just haven't poked up. But that's what I would do. And you do that in spring.
So do that in the spring. What about the location of near a shed on one side? I mean, how much sunshine?
They need sun. They need sun. Anything that is going to produce fruit. Now, we talked about pawpaws earlier. Those actually like a little bit of a shade to develop, but they still need sun for the leaves, but the fruit itself doesn't. Any kind of fruit tree really does need about 6 hours of sun. And you're looking at the same thing for vegetables, that you really do need a good amount of sun. I would not put them underneath a gutter. I think that's too much moisture for those. I think that doing salt or anything like that on the bed, just weed it. You're fine. You know, keep your bed weed free. You don't have to. Some people recommend just covering it with salt to kill the weeds. Well, that's not good in any situation, so don't do that. So just keep it weed free.
And it'll find its way up.
It will.
All right. We can also welcome Anne in Milwaukee now. Anne, thank you for giving us a call.
Hi, good afternoon. I need some help with care for my potted lavender plant that I brought indoors for the winter. Mm-hmm. It's a Hidcot Blue, a dwarf variety?
Mm-hmm. And Hidecoat.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I bought a small plant early this spring and replanted it in a bigger pot outdoors as it grew. And then I brought it in late October before the snow. And it has an east exposure, and now multiple branches are dying. Mm. Is this a concern?
How is the moisture level?
It's fine. I mean, I water it once a week.
Okay. You may actually have to water it a little bit more than once a week because of the lack of humidity in the house. That actually, you know, it's something we've talked about frequently today. It is a common thing for us when we're using forced air. So humidity can be a detriment to them. Even though they are Mediterranean type plants, they do like some humidity. What I would suggest is to take a look at repotting it. Have you repotted it since you brought it in the house, or was it just this summer?
It was repotted while it was outside, so it is still in the same pot, and it's a nice sized pot, so there's plenty of dirt in there to hold the humidity
and plenty of room.
Yeah.
Okay. What size pot did you buy it in? Let's start with that. Let's start at the beginning.
It was really small. It was like, you know, a 3-inch pot or whatever, and now it's in a pot that's over a foot wide.
Oh, okay. You may actually have too much space. You may have too much space for that plant. Does it fill the pot?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, then yeah, we're okay.
Gorgeous.
Cross that one off. Okay, we're going to keep going down this list.
And I do have a rosemary plant that I bring in every year, and I've done that for 3 or 4 years, and that one's gorgeous. But I'd never tried lavender, and I don't know. Maybe I should have, you know, put it in the ground and left it there rather than trying to bring it in.
Hidecoat actually does do pretty well for us here. I've had good survival rate with that. But let's take a look at what's dying back on it then, because If you kind of checked for insects and diseases on it when it came in, and if you do this with rosemary, then you're familiar with what to do bringing a plant in. And lavender is going to be pretty close in care to what rosemary likes. And I don't know that I would worry tremendously about seeing some dieback unless you're seeing some mushiness on the crown of the plant. Are you?
And I just thought, you know, maybe because I've never done this before, I didn't know what to expect, and maybe it was just from the shock of bringing it in.
You will have some of that, and so really inspect the crown when it comes in. To me, lavender, you're going to see just a little bit more dieback on the main plant itself than you will ever see on rosemary, because typically that's going to be one or two stems coming out that you have on a plant. And so you're not going to see a lot of activity on the crown. But with lavender, you've got multiple points coming up out of the ground. And dig around on there where you're seeing those stems die back and see if you can see any kind of activity. It may be that you're going to lose that top growth, but it'll send it. It's acclimating to the inside environment, and you may actually see some stuff starting to poke up out of the crown.
Okay, great.
Does that make sense to you?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And then don't throw the lavender out. Christmas is coming. Everybody needs part of a plant. So you can make some nice little sachets out of that lavender. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
But I, you know, really, and if you're not seeing any kind of new activity on that, I would actually pull it out of the pot, knock the dirt off, and see what's going on.
Okay.
Because you may end up just cutting back parts of the plant and replanting it. And if you're going to do that, whatever you've got for a pot, I would say disinfect the pot before you put it back in.
Okay.
And if it's clay, you can do that with a 10% bleach solution. If it's plastic, just get a new one.
Okay.
And then you should be good to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck.
Bye.
Listening to Anne, I do wonder, how do you know when parts of the plant are dying off, when you should clip them, when you should cut it back, and when you should just let things happen, even with yellowing leaves or when things are turning brown? How do you know how to not make it worse?
The plant itself, each one has a different way of care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's many of the things that I do, it's from years of killing stuff. And I, you know, I have people say, well, you can't actually say you kill stuff. Yeah, I can. I kill things, and I watch what happens when I do certain things to plants, or what it takes when I go to a client's place. What does it take to bring it back to life? And so it's been a lot of years of observation. You know, yes, you can cut this one back. No, you can't on this one. At this point in the year, you should be seeing some growth coming out of the crown, or you should be seeing something that looks like healthy tissue under the dead needles, leaves, etc. And so it's really what does the plant look like at various stages? And then you can kind of gauge it off of that. What can I do? What can't I do? And in some situations, it may be that cutting it off at the ground level is the only way that you're going to take care of a problem. Some survive beautifully. For some, that's the killing cut. So it really is what's going on, what are all the different factors and what's going on with the plant. What can it afford to lose and still continue to live, and what can it not afford to lose?
I want to get one more piece of advice out of you this holiday season. Some people like to buy potted evergreens. They decorate with them inside, and then later on they plant them outside.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a good idea?
You can do it. You really
can,
yeah. Right now, I was planting plants in my yard last week. I know they're not going to grow, and I know that takes special care. So at this time of the year, what you're looking at is maybe prepping that hole before the holidays. You want to keep that potted tree in the inside as the least amount of time as possible, because you don't want it to acclimate to being inside. It'll start to lose needles. It just doesn't like it. So you put it in the house, decorate it, and then you put it outside. But if we're going to get some cold weather, dig the hole and cover everything with a tarp so that you can actually fill that hole back in. Take the pot off or the burlap or whatever it is, get it in the ground, get the soil into it. And then when it freezes solid, then you can put a layer of mulch on it. And the only reason you do that is to prevent it heaving and jumping out of the ground if we have warm weather and cold weather. So that's really what you can do, and do it successfully.
And if I dig the hole ahead of time, I'm much more likely to get that plant in the ground than if I think, oh, I have to do all all of this start to finish.
Yes, you are.
All right. I'll take the advice. Liz, thank you so much for being with us here on another edition of Garden Talk.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Liz Freemuth provides concierge horticultural services through her business, The Garden Hoe. You've been here with us on the Ideas Network. Jill Nadeau is our producer. Tyler Ditter operating the board for us. I'm Keely Boltina in for Larry Mueller, and thank you for joining us today.